You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Ground ball right side. Hensley will underhand it to Yuli Gurriel, and that is a sweep for the Houston Astros. First sweep ever here at Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg, and the first time they have swept Tampa Bay since the 03 season. Plummer, Tampa Bay have been playing very well here at home prior to this series. That's a big-time sweep.
Yeah, that was Todd Callis after the Astros, as you heard him say, swept the Rays yesterday. The Rays have always given the Astros enough trouble to where they're not able to get the sweep. And with how good the Rays have been, this was kind of a nice surprise. Astros win that game 5-2. They head to Baltimore, where Justin Verlander will be on the mound. Guys, I was really happy to see this win, not because it matters, like they secured the AL West a couple days ago, but the Rays have, they got a little too cocky for me.
I'm intrigued by this.
They're a little too, like, oh, we have no payroll. Oh, every year. Look at us. We're cheap.
You know, they are essentially the new version of the Oakland A's.
Right.
It's like, hey, we're Moneyball,
like,
too.
Like, I'm done talking. I'm done. I get that you guys are cheap. That's fine.
They have a very good team, though, to their credit. What's funny, though, is it seems to be falling apart. I did not know this until yesterday afternoon, but apparently there was a fight between two players in the parking lot after the Astros beat the Rays on Monday. And I'm sorry, once again, Google is letting me down here. That was a problem for us yesterday, Vanessa. The entire website, Google, did not work.
Oh.
Here's the story. Randy Arozarena and Yandy Diaz had to be separated in the parking lot after Monday night's game. Neither played on Tuesday.
What were they arguing about?
It's a great question. I've been looking for the details all day today. I haven't seen them. If someone can, please tag us in it. This is a team that maybe has more issues than you would think. And it is interesting to note that the Astros have had very few clubhouse issues over the last couple of years. Like, maybe the biggest example of a issue in the Astros clubhouse was with how they felt about Justin Verlander last year. But he was injured. So, I mean, is it really that big of a deal?
He was injured, and I think there was stress not only from his injury, but you have to remember coming up, like the COVID year, the one year they didn't go to, clinch the AL West or whatever. I mean, I just think that was a stressful time in general. And Justin Verlander hasn't exactly issued a mea culpa.
No.
But you heard him say when he was with Julia, I appreciate it more. I feel like
his mea culpa is winning the Cy Young this year, because he's going to win it, especially after the Astros did what they did to Shane McClanahan on Monday. But a lot of things that you like in last night's victory. First off, Lance McCullers continues to deal and go deep into games, which has been an issue for him in the past. 7 innings, 8 strikeouts along the way. You rally from down 2-1 in the 8th with some offense. Martin Maldonado in 2 of his last 3 games has 3-plus hits.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to make of that, but I'll take it.
But when Michael Brantley is out for the season, whoever can step up batting, I think, is great.
Yeah. The bottom of the lineup last night, Jazz McCormick and Martin Maldonado were 5-for-8. So that's good to see. This is one of the tougher tests that they're going to have the remainder of the regular season. And I think we can just keep on saying to ourselves that the American League is really the Astros to lose. Unless you are looking at the New York Yankees and thinking to yourself that they're going to be, this time around, mentally tough in a way that they just haven't been in the playoffs the last couple of times that they've gone up against Houston. And, you know, I know that there's more to it than that, but that is something I just don't think that the Yankees really have anymore, is like that toughness, that killer instinct, that whatever. They're just not there anymore. The Rays don't seem to have it, and it seems like their clubhouse is falling apart. It's pretty prime looking in the American League right now.
Yeah, the Astros are a mature team. And when you look at their month of September, they played the Angels, the Rangers, the Angels again, the Tigers, the Athletics, and then the Rays. Up next, the Orioles, and then they'll finish the month with the Diamondbacks and the Rays. look, the scheduling gods were not kind to the Astros at the beginning of the year. They had more road games in a row than anybody. And then after the All-Star, they got like a three-day break when a lot of teams got five.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people say this is an easy month of September. These guys had a really hard first half of the year. But to see them play against the Rays and how dominant they are, I wouldn't mind the Rays for a little divisional playoff round.
Oh, I would love to get Tampa Bay.
I mean, I think that's an easy win for the Astros.
I'm curious as to how it's going to play out, too, because remember, now we're looking at baseball's playoffs the same way that we used to look at the NFL playoffs when it was six teams and two teams had the bye. So,
yeah, break it down. We were talking about this on the break, about how every year we have to refresh our memory on the MLB playoffs.
And it's tricky, too, because there's three divisions, so right. That means that there's three wild card teams coming out. So right now, the Mariners are half a game back of Tampa Bay, who just lost three in a row. The Mariners have lost two games in a row. Toronto's in first for the wild card. They are 2.5 games up on Tampa Bay, and they are, I would make them, three games up on the Mariners, essentially. That means that Toronto is probably going to play the winner of the American League Central, assuming things hold true. So that means that after they likely dispatch of who is in front of the is it the Indians? No, excuse me.
Guardians.
Racist.
Canceled.
The Guardians. They have been playing well recently, but I mean, who would you pick if you had a gun to your head? The Blue Jays, who are so hyped going into this year, or the Cleveland Guardians?
It's funny you say that, because the Guardians have like a young and scrappy team. Would you? I almost might rather do the Blue Jays.
The Toronto's got so
much
offense.
They do, and then
offense,
you know Springer's going to want to be on his game.
Yeah, if I had to pick between those two, I'm picking definitely Toronto. So then after that, you have to figure out, hey, geez, I'm having a tough time here. So the Mariners, they would end up playing. Jesus, I don't know how to read this
all right,
at all.
Everybody,
you know what?
Paul Gallant, playoff
Paul Gallant, playoff Paul here. Did I just screw this up entirely?
It's fine.
It is too confusing.
The Astros are going to be good.
Get rid of this extra team.
They play
this
the
is outrageous.
At some point.
You know what? I'm going to go back.
A hard time. I'm going to call 18 SportsNet real
hold
quick.
On,
that was hard.
Did I have this right?
Almost.
Okay.
I feel like so. The winner of Rays Blue Jays will face the number one seed, which is probably going to be the Astros.
That's okay.
There we go.
Guardians Mariners would probably play the Guardians, and that means that the Mariners would probably beat the Guardians and play the Astros. Thank you. I got four of the three.
This has been playoff Paul.
I'm just going to kill myself right now. I'm going to commit seppuku, and we'll pretend this never happened.
So you need some ayahuasca to relax.
Yeah.
Coming up, we have
a must-read
article on Dusty Baker, and the tidbits from this are amazing. First, Paul's going to tell you about his friends at BUSR.
BUSR.com/ESPN.
You want to bet on the playoffs.
Do you have no idea what's happening in the American League? Go to their website. Because they'll know, and I won't. BUSR.com/ESPN. Double your deposit within the first 24 hours, up to $1,000. And you can bet on that first-round playoff matchup between the Seattle Mariners and the Cleveland Guardians, as things currently stand. Or you can bet on that wild-card matchup between, get this, it's the Toronto Blue Jays, and it's, of course, the other team, the Tampa Bay Rays. You could do it that way. I know what's going on. It's fine. BUSR.com/ESPN. It's your go-to place for all things gambling, college football, NFL, or blackjack, roulette, whatever you want. It is there. BUSR.com/ESPN. BUSR.com/ESPN. Sign up today.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, Paul will try to redeem himself with explaining the playoffs tomorrow.
Yeah, this time we're going to get a flow chart. So the team that has the best record, Vanessa, in the American League West.
Okay.
They win the American League West. And wow. That's the Houston Astros.
Emmanuel Acho is with us. Thank you so much.
I'll write a book about it.
There was a great article in The Athletic that was released yesterday. And okay. It was just about Dusty Baker in general. Not necessarily his background, etc., but what it's like to play for Dusty Baker. He's managed different teams. He's managed the Reds. He's managed the Nationals, obviously, here in Houston. He has a lot of experience with a lot of different ball clubs. And he's well known. So they went around. And they interviewed some of the guys about their favorite stories and some of their favorite tidbits about Dusty Baker.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Just for FYI, Sean and Paul have not read this article.
Yeah, long form reading, not my strong suit.
As we start with a very tidbit from Bronson Arroyo, who played for playoff.
Bronson Arroyo,
yeah, throwback.
One time, my dad had drinks with Bronson Arroyo, and his line to Bronson Arroyo was, "Hey, you look like Bronson Arroyo." And my dad tells that story still.
Apple doesn't fall far from the tree, am I right?
Hey, nice cornrows.
Does your dad
like Bronson
also
Arroyo?
It was the cornrow era for Bronson Arroyo, yes.
Which was, he's a musician now. Bronson Arroyo basically says that Dusty Baker should be labeled Mr. Steal Your Girl. Here's the story from Bronson Arroyo. Bronson Arroyo. I was standing out in front of the hotel with a girl, and he walked up to her and said, "You know who I am?" She said, "No." He said, "You seen that commercial with the guy with the beard in the beer commercial, the most interesting man in the world?" He goes, "Well, I'm the second most interesting man in the world." That was pretty much the damn truth, said Bronson Arroyo.
Did it work?
I don't know.
Was he married?
Is that he's not actually hitting on Bronson Arroyo's girlfriend.
Oh,
but
gotcha. He's just being like cutesy, smooth, older guy. Okay, answer this question. If you're there with your significant other and an older guy comes up and he's like sort of being flirtatious, do you take that as a compliment or do you take that as creepy?
I think it's hilarious. If it's Dusty Baker and he, like you said, married,
on the guy.
Funny guy, totally depends
so
on
the guy.
So
it's 100% like, is the person ugly or is the person attractive?
No, it's not that at all.
Okay.
Is this person a creep or is this person just a fun-loving, swaggy guy like John Dusty Baker?
Have you seen the Saturday Night Live commercial where they had Fred Armisen and Tom Brady and they were like explaining the do's and don'ts of workplace sexual harassment?
Yeah, it's hilarious and it's accurate.
Because it's like, Tom Brady being flirtatious isn't creepy because he's hot. Fred Armisen being flirtatious is creepy because he's not. Okay, but good that I got your perspective on this.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Sean Kelly, did I tell you the story about exit velocity, Sammy Solis? Oh my God, that was a huge one. Sean Kelly says, this shows you that Dusty's brilliant, smart, awesome, funny, and old school. We're in spring training, and everyone is getting off to kind of a slow start. We're not hitting great. Joe Blanton adds, players talk when they do that. What's your swing doing? What's your exit velocity? Sully said Dusty would just walk around the clubhouse and start talking about something that bothered him. He was venting about metrics and exit velocity. Dusty's like, quote, I see all you guys in the video room just looking at your swings, reading all these stats. At some point, you just have to say F all that S and go out there and hit. All I hear is y'all talking about launch angle and tendencies and exit velocity. Effing exit velocity? Mother effing exit velocity? How about mother effing exit hits? Everybody was dying laughing
for
the players.
You know what? Thank you. There is a place for old school men in baseball. Like, shut up with exit velocity. Who cares about exit velocity? Who cares about launch angles? Who cares about win probabilities? Who legitimately cares about this stuff? Like, do you really want to know? Can't you just be impressed by something that happened without having some sort of stupid numerical data to explain it? Amazon's gone way too far with it. Remember when they were bringing up the Amazon Next Gen stats and they had, like, the commercials nonstop during any NFL football game? I don't care that it was a 62% probability that someone caught a pass. Either it looked cool or it didn't. It should be that simple. I'm glad that Dusty Baker is doing this. I think it is a little more important maybe in baseball these days because of the way that general managers are looking at things.
And this was also a couple of years ago.
But he's right. Hit the bleeping ball and shut the
Kelly
heck
says,
up.
Kelly and Solis say that every time a guy for the rest of the season blooped one into the outfield, everybody would say, F exit velocity, exit hits.
Hearing all these swears is making me want to swear. I like it. I like that Dusty's got a sailor's mouth.
Joe Blanton says he called one day me and Sean Kelly into the office and said, hey, can I see you guys in my office in 10 minutes? As soon as we walk in, Dusty's smoking a cigar. Tupac was blasting so loud, and you couldn't hear him talk. And he just gives us a random speech.
I like it. What was the speech about?
I don't know. He doesn't go into detail. Hear it. I'm guessing it's something that
over Tupac.
Something like that.
I wonder what Tupac song it was.
I don't know. Chris Heisey, who played for him with the Reds and the Nationals, said one time Dusty called me into his office in Cincinnati. I don't do a whole lot of cussing, and he knew that. So he'd always apologize for cussing around me. He goes, "Hey, Heisey, I know how you grew up. I know you're a cheap effer. I think you should give this to your wife." And he hands me a Louis Vuitton purse to give to my wife.
That's awesome. Legend. First off. Second, have you ever been around someone that's uncomfortable with swearing?
Yes. I grew up going to a Church of Christ 3 times a week. So I primarily grew up around people that did not cuss.
Where did you go bad? Huh? Although you're not as bad as me about it.
I went to Catholic school for 12 yeah. years.
I went to Catholic school for 6 years. Can you guys tell?
It is the reason that I've had to do so much shame unpacking is because of the heat that I would feel on my forehead and the physical effect if I accidentally cussed. And then once I got to be in early high school, I was like, I don't know that it's that big of a deal.
Bleep it.
Right. Bleep it is exactly what
and
I said.
And now we work where we still can't cuss.
Right.
I know. It's the worst.
Well, you cuss on your podcast.
I do. I swear too much, though. And honestly, no, I swear way too much. I know it, too. It's bad. And I'll catch myself. I'm like, why are you doing this? Because here's why. In third grade, when I watched an episode of South Park that I had downloaded off of Kazaa Lite.
What is that?
It's a it was like after Napster got shut down. Napster was how you could illegally download music for free.
Yeah, I remember Napster.
Well, this was like the next thing that popped up. And I remember I would watch a lot of South Park, so I thought swearing was cool because the kids on South Park swore. And I never stopped thinking that swearing was cool. And now it's like such a part of my vocabulary that I can't quit him anymore.
Joe Blanton says, one time Dusty Baker left moonshine in my locker. I went into his office and he was like, "I got it from a buddy of mine. I know you're from Kentucky, so you probably like that S." That ish.
I like that he's roasting a person from Kentucky, too.
I like that every single one of these stories, he's calling him an S word yeah. or an F word. I just love that he cannot address
You guys
players.
See why now he's my favorite manager I've ever... I love this man.
But it's funny
because
you never get to see this side of him. I want to see this side of him all the time. Like, why?
You can see it at certain times when he'll like tell the story about how he couldn't figure out the peacock when he had COVID, so he just watched a Jimi Hendrix documentary. But you don't get to see the full Dusty.
He's so reserved whenever he's in that press conference setting. And I don't know, maybe it's because he realizes that many people who cover baseball don't exactly have the biggest personality.
No, you don't say.
Listen, this is just a theory of mine. Wink, wink. I would love to see this Dusty all the time. And I think that, honestly, if we're talking big picture baseball, this is the kind of stuff that they got to find a way to highlight behind the scenes. Because I think, if I'm being honest, of the players across sports, basketball players are generally not very good to talk to in that they don't want to talk to you. Like, you can tell that they never want to be there.
Right.
Football players, I think, are a little bit different. Baseball players are available, but they, like, never... They are just, a lot of them are just boring. And the ones that are, the people in this industry that actually are entertaining, like, you never would know. You never would know that with Dusty Baker.
Dusty Baker, per Joe Blanton. I heard stories that if he had a dream the night before about a situation, and in the game a similar situation would come up, he would make a change based on that.
What?
Kelly adds...
That's a little concerning.
Kelly adds, every now and then Dusty would go with someone off the wall out of the bullpen, and you'd be like, what the heck? I'm not sure I follow this one. But we would make the joke, I guess he dreamed that S up last night.
Oh, my God.
He'd be the first to tell you. He'd be like, I had this dream last night. Blanton adds,
I don't
want to
know this. Can we rewind and pretend that this never came out? I don't want to think about this going into the playoffs. That he has dreams? Yeah, I got to put Phil Maton in this tough spot. Uh-oh. Martin Maldonado came to me in a dream. Put him in the cleanup spot.
There you go.
Let's have him play left field.
Joey Votto said, I love him. He's my favorite manager ever. No hesitation. Kelly said, with Dusty, it's borderline crazy, but there's a method to it. Wirtz adds just a brilliant mind. It was honestly one of the most entertaining reads.
I love that
article. Athletic did, and I want to give credit to the guys that wrote it and did the interviews.
They did not Athletic people anymore.
It was Jason Jenks, Trent Rosencrans, Patrick Mooney, and Daniel Brown. They did not interview any current Astros players. I will say, though, from what we've heard from Lance McCullers Jr. and other guys, even guys that love stats, they love Dusty Baker.
Yeah.
So I think that I don't want to say we're taking it for granted, but I do feel like, in a way, people may be taking for granted that when Dusty does retire, this is somebody that is a huge, huge part of the fabric of the game.
And what he's best at is the stuff that we don't see.
Correct.
It's those kind of conversations over a long season. Like that, in the words of Dusty Baker, that bleep matters. That,
yes.
You actually need to like keep guys relaxed, keep them focused, be generally a good hang, and also someone they can respect. And you know, all we see is who he puts out there in the sixth inning. But now we know it's because he had a dream.
It is because he had a dream. I think, too, the other thing is when you take inventory about the guys that he's affected, and if you read this article in full, again, it's courtesy of The Athletic, there are a lot of guys that talk about when they lost a parent or when they, you know, how Dusty was really there for them. So, yeah, I think it's easy to get caught up in, okay, well, he hasn't won a World Series here and all of that. Put some respect on Dusty Baker's name. We love you, Dusty. If you love your home but you want cheaper insurance,
wonderful.
Listen to me, TGS. I know the rising costs are happening. I know inflation. But so many of our listeners have switched and have called us and told us they're saving thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars, stuff that makes a difference right now. So all you have to do, get out your phone, text MONEY, M-O-N-E-Y, to 233-233. Their system is going to ask for your address. You send it back and you get the full quote within 15 seconds. This is a legit company. TGS has an online rating that's almost perfect. Their average customer from last year saving $870. Simple, fast, easy, big savings. You don't even have to talk to anybody on the phone. TGS Insurance. Do it, people. Text MONEY to 232323. Get your home insurance quote and save big today.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, I just loved on an article from The Athletic, so I'm going to hate on one. This one was art.
Fair and balanced.
This, yeah. Big J journalism.
What is
right?
happening? What is going on? I'll tell you what's going on.
It's
Vanessa's about to talk about a guy who almost was the head coach of the Houston Texans.
Dan Pompey did an article, and the headline is, Josh McCown may jump from former NFL quarterback to head coach, but he's not jumping the line. It basically romanticizes Josh McCown, his servant heart, that's an exact quote, his leadership skills. After firing Colley this past offseason, the Texans interviewed McCown again. He met with him twice, spending time with GM Nick Caserio, Executive Vice President Jack Easterby, and owner Cal McNair. Longtime Houston NFL writer John McClain plugged in with the hometown team, reported McCown was the favorite for the job. Dan Pompey is basically making a case for Josh McCown.
Mm-hmm.
Then recently fired Dolphins head coach Brian Flores filed a lawsuit, then he didn't get the job, blah, blah, blah. But other NFL teams, say Dan Pompey, have made runs at McCown over the years. The Jags interviewed McCown before they hired Doug Peterson. The Colts, Eagles, and Vikings, and probably others, have tried to entice him to join their coaching staffs. Yeah, but they didn't entice him as a head coach.
Correct.
That's my whole thing, is that everyone says these teams were interested. The Texans were the only team interested in him as a head coach. Other teams were interested in bringing him on as a quarterback coach, which, by the way, would make sense. Everybody seems to like Josh McCown. Everybody seems to work well with him. But like my issue is always and forever that he was going to be hired to be a head coach with no coaching experience.
That would have been awful. Do you believe in the idea of there being a line for career opportunities?
No, because I've skipped the line in a lot of regards. But I do think that there's something to be said about going from not having worked in an industry to being the head honcho of an organization.
Totally agree. However, it's not up to the people that are
right
in line. It is up to the people that are making those hiring decisions. Some of them are good at what they do.
Yeah.
Some of them are bad at what they do. And it does constantly become a conversation about race when we talk about head coaches being hired in the NFL, mainly because there are some guys out there who suck and you think to yourself, wait, in a league that's predominantly black, we can't find an ex player who's better than this. I know that of late, Eric Bieniemy is the name that's consistently brought up. Why hasn't he gotten an opportunity?
For like 2 years.
Why hasn't he gotten a gig? Well, maybe there's something going on in these interviews that we don't know about. Maybe there's something to his background at Colorado that people don't want to get brought into the limelight once again and turned into an issue. They're not sure how he'd handle it. They're not sure how people would receive it. There's always reasons for it. But it's interesting that this article is about how Josh McCown, I guess, doesn't want to cut a line where he kind of feels guilty about the idea that other people are interested in him as a head coach.
Well, to be clear, it's not his fault if he got accepted, if he got offered that job.
100%.
And he should take it.
I agree.
I mean, it's the proverbial, like, if you get offered a job on SportsCenter out of college, you would take it. You
no
wouldn't
doubt.
Be ready, but you would take it.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
When it comes to being a head coach, says this article, some are born ready and some are never ready. There aren't many in between. But McCown is not angling to be a head coach next year. He says he'd be receptive to any NFL job. Quote, I'll clean toilets if it's the best thing for the organization.
Oh.
He says it's about bringing value to a team.
So no team is... So
what'd
teams are lining up to give him a job.
Right.
He's willing to clean toilets, but he still just does not have an NFL job.
This is the most romanticized, and it's somebody, by the way, I have respect for, Josh McCown, but this is too much.
Also, some people are born ready, some people are never ready, and then we just never revisit, like, so which one's Josh
right.
McCown?
And there's no in-between. Actually, I would argue the majority are in-between.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what he wants to, because, okay, he doesn't want to cut the line, but I'd be willing to clean toilets. You sound kind of desperate, right?
Chris Ballard says, quote, I think the preference would be to get him some applied experience in terms of coaching. But look, coaching, if anybody could make the jump and do it, he could. If he was successful doing it, I wouldn't say that's a shock. Josh is a really special guy. Chris Ballard, baby, what are you doing?
Again, all these people can give him these, like, well, he, you know, if anyone could do it without getting their foot in the door, it's really hard, but Josh McCown could do it. It's like, well, you could also just get him a job. Like,
right.
You could... There's all you could be. He can be an analyst. He can be quarterback coach. He can be offensive coordinator. Like there's so many. I mean, not like there is a line, but there's so many steps on the ladder before you get to the head coach.
It's like I think somebody should hire him. I mean, I won't.
Yeah,
but I think somebody.
We do not have room for in the Indianapolis Colts for him. But
good Lord.
He'd be great.
Let me ask you guys something though. Mike Vrabel was the head coach of a team that had the one seed in the AFC last year.
Okay.
That was quarterbacked by Ryan Tannehill and had a ton of injuries. Is Mike Vrabel a good coach? Because remember, when he was here with the Texans, as a linebackers coach, he was good. As a defensive coordinator, he wasn't very good.
But he didn't jump right to a head coach.
Could he have jumped right to a head coach?
Oh.
Was what I was trying to get to.
Oh.
So like, because you're right. Like, that he did eventually have, like, he put in his years, if you will.
Yeah.
Do you think he would have been good? I think he would have been good. Like, I don't think that he necessarily needed to have been a coach before. Obviously, it helped, and he had a little experience on the job.
I've had NFL coaches tell me that the head coaching role is more of a quote-unquote leader of men role.
Yeah.
And that the coordinators are the ones actually doing the grunt work.
100%. I mean...
So, to your point...
I think with Vrabel, that was always thought of, because he was a smart but, like, manly guy.
Yeah.
But the one guy who was willing to challenge Belichick in team meetings, and think about that, like that's something that would probably get a lot of coaches pissed off if you were going to do that, let alone someone with his pedigree, Belichick. Dan Campbell, a little bit different with it. And to Campbell's credit, he has delegated a lot of tasks to a very loaded coaching staff.
I think that's the key.
So there has to be some element of it. But I think that the idea of what you're looking for in a head coach, it is very subjective. I don't know that you can definitively say about any coaching candidate that he has done X, Y, or Z enough to merit having a head coaching gig.
Right.
And like, everyone was laughing at the McCown thing. We don't know, though. I mean, if everyone in locker rooms likes him, and if he is so highly thought of around the league, someone's going to hire him. We're going to figure it out. Does he really need to have had that experience on another coaching staff for a couple of years? I'm trying to think of examples where it's blown up in a team's face. I can't off the top of my head. If you have any, bring them up.
Yeah, we have Gary on the line that'd like to talk about Josh McCown. Hi, Gary.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
I just want to say, only for the Texans. Like, the McCown thing was just absolutely, like, it's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, to Paul's point, I mean, yeah, maybe he works out, maybe he doesn't. Like, you know, we don't know. But the fact of the matter is he's completely, completely unqualified.
Right.
There's, like, probably 25 other candidates who would have been better. And if it wasn't for the Texans, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Like, it's a ridiculous concept.
Yeah, that's true.
And, I mean, just the point. I mean, Jeff Driskel still being on this team is another. And, I mean, I know that's, like, a small thing.
Come on, Gary, the Driskel cat. You don't believe in it?
I've ever seen.
You don't like that package?
I mean, he's terrible. He's terrible.
It's worked, though. I agree with you. He's not a good quarterback, but that formation has been surprisingly one of the more effective things that the Texans have done in offense to this point.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm obviously like a disillusioned Texans fan, but the fact that they even considered hiring somebody who hadn't even been like a Pee Wee League head coach is absolutely absurd. And if it wasn't for the Texans, we wouldn't be having the conversation. So that's
appreciate
all
the
I
color,
got.
Gary.
No, that's a good. I mean,
probably right.
Good points there.
Probably right.
That is the best point. Is that like the Texans are the only team that's like actually interested in them.
Right?
Like everyone else feels like they are getting asked in an article to talk about a guy they like, and so they're not going to be like. Yeah, no, it's crazy that he got two head coaching interviews.
Bleep that guy.
Without ever working in the NFL. But it's like, yeah, you know, I think he would be a great coach if he ever got a coaching job.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. It would be funny if one of the comments was like, that guy's a total idiot.
Yeah, like, what are we talking about?
This
right
wannabe now? Ivan Drago guy with his, woo, look at me, I've got blonde hair, I'm so cool, I've been a backup quarterback.
Yeah, like, would Charlie Whitehurst be a great coach? Like, what are we doing?
Ooh, right.
Good point. Charlie Whitehurst would be a good front man for a country band.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, great head coach.
It is about what you think the role should be. Right? It is about, like, do you think it is a leader of men role? Can you designate that? Either way, I mean, I just don't think Josh McCown deserves to be a head coach and would be great. But, you know, and Chris Ballard, how's your hiring going?
This is an interesting Twitch. This is from OG from H-Town. All y'all bitch about the teams you think should think outside the box. The Texans go do it, and y'all kill them for it. Which is it? I don't think, I mean, to Gary's point, to Sean, what you were saying, I think it's because they're the Texans that we just assume the worst in everything that they do. But in retrospect, like going back to this offseason, I'm not saying it was a mistake to hire Lovie Smith, but if they did what they wanted to do with Caserio in charge, like was it really guaranteed to fail if you have a coaching staff around Josh McCown that's a good one? Because you've had some pretty good coaches on this staff for a couple of years, you know? Maybe not the head coach with O'Brien or with Cully, but, I mean, Romeo Crennel, highly thought of across the league. Older, of course, but really thought of...
Yeah, people like him a lot.
I mean, he's very good at maximizing the most out of players that he's had playing for him. I heard Trent Dilfer talking about that on Ryan Russillo's podcast this week. You obviously had Lovie Smith hanging around. Pep Hamilton has done some things in this in football. Well, who knows if that's actually going to translate into anything. But I don't think we definitively knew it would have been a disaster. It just would have looked bad. And much like with firing David Culley was going to look bad if they did it after a year, hiring Josh McCown was going to look bad, but anything they did was going to look bad. So I don't think I was as against hiring Josh McCown as everybody was before they made that move.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, which franchise is in a more depressive state, the Texans or the Bears? We want your opinions on this coming up.
ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we're rolling along on a Thirsty Thursday. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes is behind the glass, as always. Two teams meeting this Sunday in Chi-Town. The Houston Texans will take on the Chicago Bears. Two franchises in situations that are not ideal for the fan bases, but also two franchises that the fan bases probably aren't surprised because this is not like the Steelers where they're having an off year. It's not like the Colts where at least they've been decent recently. These are two franchises that have really been through it. You posed an interesting question, PG.
I put this up on Twitter yesterday, and I was curious as to what the results would be. What's more depressing, being a Texans fan or a Bears fan? 83 votes with 6 hours to go. 53 say Texans, 47 say Bears. And my reasoning for the Bears being depressing is that, first off, since 1950, they have been to the playoffs a total of 19 times. Obviously, the playoffs expanded as time went
on. How many years?
We're talking 71. Wow. In our 72nd year, where they have made the playoffs 19 times. Want to do a little math? The Texans making the playoffs 6 times in 20 or 19 years going into year number 20. That is about the same as far as percentages go. The Texans have been owned by the Indianapolis Colts in their history, but since 1992, the Chicago Bears are a very pathetic 14-46 against Green Bay. Now, that's when Brett Favre, I think, first came on the scene with the Packers. And obviously, since then, it's been Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. So you can understand how it would be like that. But the best quarterback in Bears history, we had a couple of people yesterday commenting in, like, oh, George Blonda. He was there for 2 years. Like, some of the quarterbacks that you guys are listing, like, it's sad how bad the Bears history has been at quarterback. Their best quarterback, Sid Luckman, played during World War II.
Jeez.
And he played during World War II.
Who could forget Sid?
By the way, he is still a guy that is not forgotten in Chicago. That's how good he was as a quarterback, but it's also how bad the quarterbacks have been since then.
Not been forgotten, because I don't think many people remember him.
Well, yeah. The last person, I don't think anyone is alive that played with him as a teammate. I looked at an article yesterday, and it was Sid Luckman's kid, who was 80, who was talking about Sid Luckman.
That's insane.
I mean, he played in the 40s, so you know, that makes a lot of sense mathematically.
I think that's all you have to say about Sid Luckman, is that Sid Luckman's kid was talking, and Sid Luckman's kid is 80 years
old. Yeah, good point. Mic drop.
Two comments. Jay Cutler, Jim McMahon. Again, yeah. Just think about that. Like, those guys aren't even close to right. Hall of Famers. McMahon was a entertaining personality. Cutler is arguably the most non-give-a-bleep player that we've seen in the NFL over the last right. 20 years. Bears history has been extremely depressing, considering...
But they have a history, have tradition.
They have a history, they have a tradition, and then you look at the history and the tradition, and it's sort of like looking at the Texas A&M Midnight Yell. It's
so
like,
you'd
oh,
rather not
Jesus.
Even be like Texans fans where you don't even have it.
Blank slate.
It's the replacement dog, right? I mean, that's what the Texans are for the Oilers. It's not the dog that you grew up with. It's a dog that probably is a little uglier, maybe a little dumber, and I get it. Like, the Oilers, there's not really much to write home about their history when you really think about it. Just they had the cool uniforms. Like, that's my issue is I want to be able to honor some of the great Oilers players who played for them right. back in the day. I think it's kind of messed up that they have to go to Nashville to get honored or remembered.
A city they literally did not play in.
Yeah, exactly.
A city they have no history or affiliation with.
Unless they enjoy
fans who do not know them.
Nash Vegas, then yes, you're 100% right on that front.
I still can't believe you haven't been.
I know. God, a terrible job on my front. But, I understand, like, the idea that, oh, yeah, you want to have history with your football team. You want to have traditions. You want to have a fight song. You want to have throwback jerseys. You want to have, you know, grainy 1940s footage of some guy.
Walter Payton's son is a local sports anchor.
That part's cool. And they have had some all-time
Super
great
Bowl
players.
Shuffle.
And they do have the 1985 Chicago Bears. But that was almost 30 years ago.
No, you're right.
40 years ago. I wasn't alive when the right. Super Bowl shuffle took place, and I'm the old one on this show. Like, that's Bears fans' best memory, and the problem that happened after that, this great team that they had, is it kind of splintered because there was essentially, like, a schism in the coaching staff between Mike Ditka, who, leader of men, great, but as far as designing things, maybe not the best, and Buddy Ryan, the defensive coordinator for the Bears, who
bad.
Also got carried off the field after the 85 Super Bowl. So that team, like, their best moment in time, like, after that moment right there, like, things stopped being as amazing as they were right away. That's their best memory. And, yes, there's, like, cultural things
you can go back
to. So you
think the Bears have it worse, the franchise?
I think that to be with that team for such a long period of time and have the history that the Bears do, yes. I think that it's more depressing to be a Bears fan. We are making an argument like this is like the tiniest, like who has the bigger schmenzer of two people that are not packing much heat? Like, you know,
let me say this though. If you're a Bears
competition.
Fan, you probably experienced some really good years with the Chicago Bulls.
True.
If you're a Bears fan, you probably just saw the Cubs win a World Series.
The Cubs, another team with a bad history. White Sox, another team with a bad history.
So, I mean, I think that there's a lot of different angles here. Justin Fields, Bears quarterback, did not do himself any favors after the last game. He said that the players work harder than the fans. He didn't really understand the fans' pain. Justin Fields walked that back this past week.
Yes, he did.
You know, I was mad after the game, and I mean, I like to address this now to get everything cleared up, but, you know, there was a thing that I said on Sunday after the game where I said, you know, the fans don't put in work. And when I was, you know, first off, you know, I was frustrated after the game. So, you know, number one, I didn't want to come and talk to you guys. I wasn't in the mood to come and talk to you guys. So, you know, I should have did a better job explaining what I meant by that. But what I meant by that was I'm talking about work, you know, regarding game on Sunday, winning
just
the game.
Sorry.
You know, I don't know any fans. I don't know what they're doing in their personal lives. And I respect every fan that we have. I'm, you know, glad that we have fans. So,
you
know, I would never disrespect, you know, anybody on what they do or what they love to do.
At the very least, he did come to a conclusion and didn't second guess himself at the very end, which I like immediately fell on the sword for mine. Bears fans have had it rough for a while. Like, I actually do empathize with them. As brought up on the Twitch, like, Walter Payton died, like,
R.I.P.
at a very young age. There's just, it's been a franchise that I think has had a lot of tough moments. And I think that you could argue that longevity of difficult times, yeah, there were a couple of great moments, but do those great moments overshadow all the misery that they've had?
Right.
I don't know.
Because I can't tell time. I thought it was 11:30 segment. It's actually our last segment. So with that, we switch to garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
So you probably shouldn't do this. A 21-year-old woman was booked in the Salt Lake County Jail because on Saturday, as the University of Utah team hosted San Diego State, the woman posted threats of violence on the Yik Yak app. I didn't know that was still a thing.
Wait, what?
Before the game, stating, quote, if the football team doesn't win, she was going to denote the nuclear reactor that is located in the University of Utah,
detonate,
causing a mass destruction.
Oh, my God.
Don't do that. Don't make threats of violence.
I mean, what if you're clearly kidding?
Utah loses.
What if you're clearly kidding?
I mean, not. It's like when you get on a plane, you can't yell, ah-ha-ha, I'm a terrorist. Like, you can't do that when you're on a plane.
It would be kind of
also, this is by far, from what I remember from Yik Yak, not the craziest thing that has ever been put on that app.
Yik Yak was when we were in college.
Yeah.
That was so weird. It's anonymous. You could do, like, anonymous messages.
And it was, like, geolocated. So it was, like, people in your area just posting anonymous.
Yeah.
Police noted the student does have knowledge of the nuclear reactor. First off,
I don't like that. Nope, don't like
that. That maybe changes my opinion on it. And is aware of where the reactor is located.
Don't like that.
And attends class in the same building where the reactor is housed.
Nope.
What?
Don't like that.
We're letting students go to classes next to a nuclear reactor? First off, safety. Second off, what if one of these kids loses their mind after the Utah Utes losing aim? I've got 180 on this.
Disturbing.
This is actually concerning.
For the San Diego State game. It's a bit
much. Yeah, right. All right, so you found the story about NASA. It's kind of a preseason type deal, right? Was it you or you?
Paul.
Yeah.
NASA story.
Oh, yeah. This is straight out of the movie Armageddon.
I kind of love it.
Deep Impact.
First of its kind experiment.
So NASA is going to shoot a missile at an asteroid millions of miles away to change its path slightly, trying to prove that if a killer asteroid ever heads to Earth, there'd be a fighting chance. I could stay awake just to hear you breathe.
Great song that you're absolutely ruining. Please stop.
What? That's from the movie Armageddon?
Yeah, but it's Steven Tyler who sings it a little bit differently.
That sounded just like Steven Tyler.
That's an exciting... Hey, shout out to NASA. We love space here in Houston.
The Astros can put on their Space City uniforms and go up into the sky to defend the, you know, United States of America.
Tequila Sunrise.
Yeah. Michael Bay, direct that movie.
Coming up on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, we are the We Love Dusty crew. You'll hear a little bit of a different opinion from Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham coming up next. You got the Killer Bees from 12 to 3.
Peace!
ESPN 97.5 ESPN 97.5.
Please stand by.